In 1969, the American Medical Association labeled him the King of Quacks.
In the town of Raven-sur-Aude, there came the great drowning of men.
I'm Jennifer Coffeen.
And I'm Fraser Coffeen.
And this is Creepy History.
Alrighty, hello everybody.
Yay!
Welcome back to episode 3.
Is that what we're on?
Yeah.
Alright.
Episode 3 of season 3. Woo!
I'm excited.
Yeah.
Your drink looks very, tropical?
Well, it definitely looks like a margarita.
Yes.
Right?
That's what I was going for.
But it is not a margarita.
It smells like a margarita. No right. Salt, though.
I haven't really smelled it yet. I'm going to give it a sniff. It does. Well, I mean, it's lime. Lime smells like margarita. It is not a margarita, though. This is a drink that you have probably heard of, I'm thinking.
Yeah?
This is a gimlet.
Oh! Like a lime gimlet?
Well, gimlet is inherently lime.
Oh.
So, yeah. But it's gin. Occasionally, make... You can have, like, a vodka gimlet. But the classic gimlet is gin.
Gin gimlet. Okay.
Gin and lime and simple syrup.
Oh.
Nice and simple and straightforward and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I first had this many years ago. I think I can't recall exactly. I think I started having it once because shameful. It's the drink that they drink, I'm pretty sure this is right, in Glengarry Glen Ross.
Oh, that seems about
somebody
right.
Somebody orders a gimlet.
Sure.
So I had them but I made them with like the, with like that sort of like roses lime juice that you can buy in the store, which is way too acidic and like burns a hole in your stomach. It's horrible.
Yeah.
This I used fresh lime juice.
I like how you were watching Glengarry Glen Ross and you're like, that's the drink for me.
I'm gonna live these guys' life.
Whatever that guy's drinking, I'm drinking.
That doesn't sound right now that I say that. That doesn't seem like a Glengarry kind
feel
of drink.
Like, I know, it does not feel like a Glengarry. They would just be drinking like straight bourbon or scotch.
Sure.
Scotch.
I'm gonna have to look into this.
Just like it was some sort of sad indie salesman drink.
I'm doubting my memory now.
All right.
It's unfortunate. let's have a sip and I'll tell you a little bit about the history of the gimlet. Ready?
I'm ready.
Cheers.
Cheers. Oh, it's nice. You can taste that gin, though.
Yeah, it's pretty gin heavy.
Yeah.
It's like 2 ounces of gin.
I'm stepping back my nice.
The nice has gone away. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely gin forward.
I wonder if it would be better if it was vodka. I don't know. I feel like I can just really taste the gin.
But that's what you want.
You probably want.
You're going for gin. It's a gin drink.
That's true.
One more. Come on.
All right. It's not bad.
I like it.
Yeah. It's just that gin, that weird gin taste.
Like the like Christmas tree taste?
No. I don't know what it is.
Interesting. All right.
Anyway.
The gimlet, just so you know, it came about in the 18th century.
Okay.
And it came about, that's kind of the first recording.
It doesn't feel that old to me. You know what I mean? Because you feel like when you hear gimlet, it seems more modern.
Well, true. But the reason that it first came about is because it's lime-based. And so they first started having it on ships for the scurvy,
of course.
Right? So they would have it.
Why isn't it called the scurvy?
Because you don't want the scurvy. You can't drink the scurvy. You don't want it. They would take sugar and water and lime, and they would mix it with things. In the lower decks, the lower class version was made with rum. Because rum was a cheaper drink. Mm-hmm. But on the higher, upper class, you got the gin. So this is the fancy man's way to avoid the scurvy.
So basically you can take any liquor you want and add sugar and lime to it.
I mean, sure. Why not?
Because, they're doing, rum, vodka, gin.
You can do whatever you want.
Yeah, whatever.
Right?
I'd be interested to see what
it
tasted like.
The Julia Child approach. Be fearless. Put stuff together.
I'd be interested to see what it tasted like with rum.
With rum, it's probably going to be very, you're getting into the world of, almost a pina colada-ish thing, That's probably not right at all, but, you're definitely getting tropical drink. With rum, it feels like it should have a little umbrella.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which, Makes sense. If you're on a boat, you know, trying to escape scurvy on the seas.
You need an umbrella?
You want a little umbrella in your drink.
Why?
It's tropical. You're on a boat.
Yeah, but we're talking pirates and scurvy and stuff.
Yeah, like bad boat.
This is bad boat.
Yeah, like bad weather, you know, like freezing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not jolly umbrella boat by any means. So there we go.
All right.
So I am intrigued as to who the Grand Quack, what was his name?
The King of Quacks.
The King of Quacks.
Although I do like Grand Quack.
Grand Quack is pretty good.
The King of the Quacks.
The Grand Quack. If you're the Grand Quack, it seems like you've got like an official title and you've got like a hat. And, like, you're part of a society that has, like, a quack-based secret handshake.
Oh, sure.
The Grand Quack.
You have to have a code to get in and all that.
Is it just a quack?
It's a quack. Sure.
But a specific kind of quack. Yeah, okay, so, like, but not the Grand Quack.
It's like three quacks, not four quacks.
You know? With, like, an inflection. Quack, quack, quack.
Yeah.
And then he can get in.
That's exactly it.
That's how you know you're the Grand Quack. We should delete this so that we don't get in trouble with the Grand Quacks. All right. Anyway, the King of Quacks.
Yes.
I don't know who the King of Quacks is.
Okay. So I discovered this story while we were in Joshua Tree.
Okay.
So there was a delightful, and I'll put it on our Instagram. There was a delightful book that I found in our Airbnb. Hold on. I'm finding it right now. It was called The Desert Oracle.
Ooh, The Desert Oracle.
Yeah.
I like that.
And it was like a little sort of pamphlety. It was a zine.
Yeah, sure.
It was like a little pamphlety zine thing. The Desert Oracle, a pocket field guide to the strange and mysterious. All right, how do you say it? Is it Mojave?
Mojave, right?
Sorry, yeah. I know I was going to say it wrong.
It's all right. We have established that throughout the course of the show. It's just fine. It's no worries.
I thought it was Mojave, but then I thought that was wrong, so I went back. Anyway.
Jen does not like pronunciation.
I don't.
And does
really
not
bad.
Like alcohol-forward beverages. Two dislikes.
I like pronunciation. I just can't do it.
Sure.
Anyway, I think it's an anxiety thing that my brain's like, no, that's wrong. And then I say it the other way, and it's always
so you
wrong.
Panic.
And then it's actually, that's usually wrong. Anyway, sorry, I digress. We were in Joshua Tree, found this amazing little... Desert Oracle book, and it's just some local guy who writes all these. It's like a publication you can get a subscription to.
Oh, okay.
And then he writes all these like little kooky stories about the history or what's happening, you know, in the area and all that kind of stuff, which is great fun.
Nice.
So I read the story in there. I actually had heard of the story before, but then of course I delved even deeper into it.
Okay.
Are you ready? This is the story of the Reverend Dr. Curtis Springer.
The Quack Lord.
The Quack Lord. The King of Quacks. Okay. So, Curtis Springer was born December 2nd, 1896 in Alabama. He got married to a woman named Mary Louise Birkbile, and they had a bunch of kids, a daughter Mary Lou, a son Curtis Jr., basically just kind of, I don't know, living that normal 1800s life.
Sure.
So very early in his adult life, he was quite religious. So he was sort of known for his like big, rousing public speeches, and he would like be the person who like got the crowd like into a fever pitch before somebody else came on to preach. Right. So
this was like his job. He's like a warm-up man for preachers.
I mean,
like
I don't
a hype man.
I don't know if that's what he was getting paid to do, but
like one of those people that keeps the audience at Ellen excited during the commercials.
Seems to be it. But like in a religious, you know, for religious speeches.
For God, he does that for God instead of for Ellen.
Yeah. So there was sort of this famous at the time guy named William Jennings Byron, Curtis Springer. He would be the one who drummed up the crowd. And, like, you know, get everybody really excited and wound up against demon rum.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And then this Byron guy or Brian guy would come on and, like, do his speech.
Okay.
So that's what he started out at. He was also what was called a sheet music vendor at Billy Sunday's Evangelical Services.
Yes.
So, you know, he just in that, you know, real religious, you know, fever kind of life. of the early 1900s.
And I'm sorry, the person he was opening for was William Jennings Bryan?
Correct.
He was like a, I thought that guy. Yeah, he was like a, you know, he's like a major, like, politician and stuff like that. And, like, yeah, he's a major dude.
He did not like the demon rum.
Okay.
So, yeah. So, I mean, he definitely was well known. Like, he was kind of getting out there and stuff like that. He also claimed to have been a private in the United States Army during World War I. And then after the war, he moved to Chicago and he took a job at a technical school called the Greer College. I don't think it's still around. I've never heard of it.
I'm not sure.
And it was fired in, like, the 1930s. So, you know, at this point, he's still kind of a young man. He's got a family or whatever. And, you know, he's basically moving around a lot and kind of getting odd jobs that he's not keeping for super long.
Okay.
So he begins touring the Midwest. He gives lectures. He uses fake identities.
Touring the Midwest sounds like a very euphemistic way of being like, he's kind of a bum.
I'm just hitting run around the Midwest.
I'm on a tour.
Using my fake ID.
Yeah, fake ID tour.
He claims to be the dean of Greer College.
Okay.
He claims that he attended, all kinds of fictional institutions like the National Academy, the Springer School of Humanism. It's like the Human Fund, right?
Yeah, sure.
The Springer School of Humanism. That's his own last name.
Oh, nice. Good point. Nobody calls him out on that?
Apparently, I don't know. I like the American College of Doctors and Surgeons.
Sure. That sounds like a place.
The College of College People.
Yep.
The Westlake, West Virginia College. Just making names up. And a bunch of schools in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and all that kind of stuff. So basically he's going into these places. He's, you know, using fake credentials, which I guess at the time how are people finding
out,
you know, and just saying that I'm the dean of whatever. And then he's getting these lectures and, you know, that's probably how he's kind of making some money.
He's a flim-flam man.
Yeah. So his lectures were, you know, free to the public, but he would then, about halfway through the speech, start asking for donations.
Sure.
And then he would try to sell people, private psychoanalysis, for like $25 a session and stuff like that. So he was sort of doing that, you know, old thing of like, it's free,
get in here,
everybody, like, you know, fill up the room and then start trying to, you know, like sell you all these little bits and pieces. And he often, when he would do an advertisement for his lecture, he would put an MD or a PhD or something like that after his name.
Though he was not a doctor. Okay.
Absolutely not. So his title is, he is known as the Reverend Dr. Curtis Springer. He is not a doctor.
Uh-huh.
He has no theology degree he is not a reverend.
Yeah.
You know, this is not.
Making it up.
Correct. But regardless, people are into him.
Sure.
They keep going. And, you know, they follow him around. So he still has, like, his home base in Chicago. And he then applies for a job to get, like, airtime on, are you ready for this? WGN Radio.
Hey, WGN.
I know.
All right.
To give medical advice.
Okay.
And then, WGN does a little bit of, makes a couple of phone calls or, I guess, letter writing or whatever.
Yeah.
And they look into it at the American Medical Association Bureau of Investigations and the Better Business Bureau, which was apparently around back then.
Sure.
And basically, they're like, yeah, there's no record of this guy having any kind of medical
degree.
They
do a little bit of work.
Blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
Yeah. Good for them.
So WGN Radio was like, no, thank you. So a couple people are starting to finally catch on to this. He's kind of labeled as a fraud, a doctor impersonator. So the medical community is catching on to this because people are sort of looking into it, and they've definitely like got, you know, the red flag on their thing that like somebody keeps asking about this person. He doesn't have medical, you know, he's saying he has a medical degree. He does not have a medical degree. An article in the Journal of American Medical Association from September 14th, 1936 is titled, Curtis Howe Springer, a quack in his nostrums.
Oh, jeez. Okay.
So they like write an article.
Writing articles about it. Yeah.
It concluded that a most thorough search fails to show that Springer was ever graduated by any reputable college or university, medical or otherwise. So he's never been to any schooling whatsoever.
It's all made up.
The WGN radio passes, says no thank you, but he is able to get a 2-slot-a-day job as a radio evangelist on Chicago's WCFL.
Okay.
So he is able, he's on their radio station twice a day.
Okay.
Spouting off his speeches and thoughts. So they didn't have a problem with it. So he would, I guess he was being irreverent though on this, but he would use that radio show to sell his medicine. His medicine included the antacid Rehib, which was apparently just baking soda, or like baking soda mixed with something random. I don't even know how to say that.
Antediluvian.
Antediluvian tea.
Okay.
Which was like, you know, laxative herbs.
Okay, all right.
So, yeah. And so basically he's just trying to hawk his stuff and, you know, basically like kind of uses the radio time in order to do that. So,
got it.
You know. Yeah. So around 1935, he leaves Chicago and starts, moves to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and starts preaching on their, sort of local radio, KDKA.
Okay.
So he gets like a job doing that. Okay.
That's in Pittsburgh, you said?
Correct.
Okay.
Yep. So again, he has an audience.
Sure.
People are into it. They're following him around. He gets another job. So it's around this time, which is like the mid-30s, when his wife, Mary, is like, you know what we need to do? We should open a health spa.
Ah, nice.
That's where we're heading next. And so he's into it, and he opens a resort in Fort Hill, Pennsylvania, called the Haven of Rest.
Ooh, nice name.
And, you know, it opens for 6 years. And then eventually it gets closed down for non-payment of taxes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then he sets up other resorts in Maryland and Iowa. And basically it's kind of the same thing. Really, he just runs out of money, or he gets shut down by the government because he's not paying taxes, or he's not getting the right permits, or like all that kind of stuff. But he just kind of keeps doing it. So in 1944, which is like, you know, because when it was at 1930, yeah, it was like, I mean, you know, good 10 years later or so, after doing this. He, at this point, has, you know, split ways with Mary and is now with a woman named Helen, that is his fiance. So the two, he and Helen, decide that they are going to move to the desert.
Okay.
They're like, this is where the spa is going to be. This is where the money's at. Like,
which is fair.
Yeah.
That's a valid
thought. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So they file a mining claim on federal land for about 12,000 acres.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Out into the desert, right? Okay. So it's about 8 miles long, 3 miles wide. It's, you know, it's a ton of space.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. It's empty and there's like nobody using it. But it's federal land.
Okay.
And it's not really for you to just come and take.
And just do whatever,
it's not
right?
really for sale.
Okay.
It used to be an army post and a railroad station like back in the mid-1800s. But I guess it's just kind of hanging out now. He names the settlement Zizek's. Which rhymes with Isaac's.
Yes, yes, it does. Says,
and is spelled, you ready for this? Z-Z-Y-Z-X.
Huh.
I know. Luckily, there you can find articles where it tells you how to pronounce it, Zizek's. Because I was like, I would have never
did
pronounced
you,
that
Did Zizek's. You find any sort of like root to that word? Did you just make that word up?
He made it up because he wanted it to be the last word in health.
Oh, so it's got like, so it's at the end of the dictionary.
It's at the end, yeah, Zizek's.
Okay, I'm gonna take a quick digression here.
I'm ready.
To tell you something about Zizek's.
Ooh, I'm excited.
This is not the first time in my life I've encountered the word Zizek's.
Really?
There is a...
Are you buying some,
No.
Some herbs?
There is a website, this is gonna get real nerdy, okay? So get ready.
Yep.
There is a website called Zizek's Stats, where you can go and you can enter which fish shows you've seen. That's fish with a PH, folks. Fish with a PH. And it will generate like, oh, you've seen, you know, You Enjoy Myself at 22% of your shows. And like, here's the show openers you've seen. And it's called Zyzix Fish Stats. I always assumed that it was just made up.
It's spelled this way?
It's spelled just like that.
Z-Y-Z-X?
I've never knew where the name came from.
Is it, do you think, because they want to be the last word in fish concerts?
Maybe.
I think it is.
Maybe.
You need to look up why it's named that.
I'm fascinated.
Because number one, is it like a joke because of the, I mean, it has to do with this guy.
I don't know.
Because he created this name.
Yeah.
How funny. See, well, this is why we do this podcast, to discover these amazing things.
Yeah, yeah.
Zyzix
Fish Stats.
The International House of Zyzix.
See?
Did you know that it was pronounced Zyzix?
I always thought Zyzix.
Yeah.
Zyzix was always what I thought.
In which the mysteries of the universe are explained.
No. Don't pay attention to that. This is just, it's just a place, yeah, you go and you, it tells you stuff about the fish shows you've seen. How fascinating.
Yeah, you need to Google, like,
all right,
Fish Zyzix and Curtis Springer. Whatever. Anyway.
So I digress, but I thought that was a good digression.
Yeah, no, that's a good digression.
Okay.
Okay.
Back to Zyzix.
Back to Zyzix. So, yeah. So, hilarious name.
Yeah.
And so he's really into this. He's like, we're going to make this huge desert health spa, and it's going to be great. So they originally started it with about 20 tents.
Okay. Sure.
As you do.
Gotta start somewhere.
He goes to LA like weekly, and he recruits homeless men from Skid Row and to come and like live and work there.
Okay.
So he's like, come and you can get like, you know, a free place to stay, and then of course in exchange you're like gonna do all this like manual labor or whatever. So it's one of those things where like they come for like a couple days and then they usually go back because that's not really what they thought it was going to be. I'm sure it's awful conditions. Like,
yeah,
just like in the desert, like sleeping in a tent, obviously. And it was said that he did not allow alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
So okay. I think a lot of them were like, no, thank you. But throughout time, you know, as time goes by, he gets it built, right? So he creates a 60-room hotel, a church, a cross-shaped health spa with mineral baths. I guess the pool was like cross-shaped.
That's creepy.
A radio broadcast studio, an airstrip that he dubbed Zyport.
Oh, that's amazing.
A whole bunch of other stuff. A castle.
Wow.
An imitation hot springs, which this sounds...
What's an imitation hot
springs? I'm going to tell you in a minute. It really upsets me when I was like, no. It's basically a fake... kind of like a, you know, fake hot spring, and then he heats it by using a boiler.
Oh, trashy.
I know. Okay. And also, you're just like, I feel like that's going to go wrong.
Probably,
I feel like you're somebody who's going to get burned. Okay, when I was young and lived in Tennessee, we had like a big, like a really big like back wooden porch, and there was a hot tub, and it was like wooden.
Yeah.
And it was heated from like a, there was like a heating, almost like a ring around the circle of the hot tub. And if you you could touch it with your foot, it would like burn your toe. And so I... like, you just stay in the middle, right?
Right, you don't want to avoid it, yeah.
That's what I imagine what's going on.
So basically, he made a hot tub, and he called it a hot spring.
Yes, yeah, and if you touch something, you get, like, electrocuted or something.
Jeez, okay.
That's what I thought about. Okay, anyway. So, I mean, this is quite...
yeah, this is a thing.
Spread through the desert, right? And he, it's part of it's referred to as the Boulevard of Dreams, which you're like, I bet it's not. And that's like a, you know, it's like a parkway. It leads to an oasis by the lake. And basically, so yeah, so he's building up this all the time. He spends about half his week in LA.
Did he make that name up, the Boulevard of Dreams?
I think so.
That's a Green Day song, the Boulevard of Broken Dreams. Just saying.
But Boulevard of Dreams, no, isn't that from L.A., though? That's like a movie thing.
Is it? Probably. It probably is a movie
thing.
But he's out in L.A., isn't he? Isn't he in the L.A. area here?
He's in the Mojave Desert.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's close. So, yeah, I was about to say, is he spends half his time in L.A.
Because the guys he got to help him were from L.A., right?
Correct.
Oh, okay.
So he spends, like, half the week in L.A., and because he's still recording his radio program.
Okay,
and he's doing that in L.A. now. So he goes there, like, half the week, and he does his radio program, and then he brings a whole bunch of workers back. And to like keep building on his resort. And he offers them like free room and board in exchange for labor. So, I mean, he's just doing this constantly. And then he starts recording at Zyzix.
Okay.
So he gets a radio station sort of built there. And then he's doing his syndicated radio program. And at one point, it's carried by 221 stations in the U.S. and 102 abroad. And it's like a mix of religious music and his sort of religious radio preaching.
Okay.
And then he asks for donations. you know, sure, constantly. Of course, yeah. And he sort of is like, if you send donations, then I'll send you like my special potions and my cures. And it's supposed to cure, you know, like obviously everything under the sun.
Yeah, yeah.
Hair loss, cancer, you scurvy, whatever you got.
Only the gimlet cures the scurvy.
And basically his magic cures were like celery, carrot juice, parsley, and brown sugar.
Ugh.
So not going to do much for you.
We can give that a whirl as a future creepy cocktail right
there. Oh, so gross.
Celery juice, carrot juice, parsley juice, and brown sugar.
Yep. So, he was just super fake, right? I mean, he's just, you know.
Well, that's what all those things are,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. And then he also included something... let's see. Oh, so like when you would come and like stay there. So that's the other thing. People came and like stayed there.
It's like a spot.
Yeah. And so they would give you like goat milk. They would give you antediluvian tea. They would give you some kind of something they referred to as a self-administered hemorrhoid cure. And that makes me very nervous. Mm. And they were all, you know, so just all kinds of like crazy stuff that they were just giving people. And then they would ask for donations. And then there was, again, this is if you're like staying at Zizek's, there was a, you know, twice a day, a sermon over the loudspeaker.
Ooh, over the loudspeaker.
Yeah, which you're just like, jeez, okay. In the desert, you can't get away from it.
Yeah.
I bet it goes on forever.
For sure.
For hours and hours. Okay, so now it's the 1960s. So
okay.
He moved here in, like, the mid-40s.
Mid-40s, right?
So,
yeah.
I mean, so this has been going on for 15 years. So then he starts marking off chunks of the land and then allowing donors, his, like, you know, people who are donating his money, to come and build homes on the lots. So he's just, like...
Now he's selling land, yeah.
Selling off his land that belongs to the government.
Yep.
And now the federal officials are taking notice.
Sure.
So I think at the beginning they were, I mean, I'm sure that they have, they're just like, whatever's going on in that desert, I'm just going to leave it be. Nobody wants to deal with it that much. It's probably not taking away from anything.
Yeah.
But at this point, I think it's starting to get really big and he's just like literally selling people, you know, land and they're building homes on it and it's not his.
Comes a point where they have to step in.
Yeah. So it was, he was posting mining claims under, there was some general mining law of 1872, which I think was basically like, you know, I found this land and I claim it or whatever. And they're just like, yeah, this is not a thing anymore. This
right.
is like public, you know, so no. So basically in, like the early 70s, late 60s, early 70s, the government takes, I mean, which this takes a while. They take him to court.
Okay.
And they claim he's squatting on federal land.
Sure.
Which he is. And then in 1974, he's found guilty of, squatting on federal land.
Yep. Yep.
So he offers to pay about $34,000, to base in like back rent. He's like, I'm just going to, you know, I'll pay you for all this time that I've been on the land or whatever. And the government's like, no, thanks. And they just evict him.
Oh, dang. Jeez.
They're like, get out.
We would rather you be inconvenienced than we get your money.
Yeah. So at this point there's like, you know, a couple hundred followers that are living on that land. I'm sure there were, you know, a lot of people probably left when that was going on. And then they sort of are all evicted at the same time. He is also arrested and convicted for making false claims about all his crazy health food. So I like this. It said it would cure everything from, quote, sore toes to cancer.
Uh-huh.
Always back to cancer. Sore toes.
Sore toes to cancer. One of those two.
So he's convicted of false advertising, and he ends up getting a 60-day sentence and serves, like, you know. Yeah, yeah, not too much.
That's fine, yeah.
So what happens to Zizek's? In 1976, which again, he got there in the 40s. So, mm-hmm. I mean, he was on that land just
That's
chilling out
time,
for
yeah.
a long time. They basically allow several universities, California State University and others, to like use the facilities that are still there. Because, I mean, there's like buildings there and all that kind of stuff. And they are still using it to this day.
Okay.
So a bunch of colleges combined their sort of funds and resources, and they converted it into a research station called the Desert Studies Center. Springer eventually is released from prison. He and Helen, they move to Las Vegas. And he stays there till he passes away in August 19th, 1985, at the age of 88. And he is buried in the Riverside National Cemetery. So he is quite a character in Joshua Tree. And he, you know, was really well known. Let me see if I can find it. he was well known for, you know, all his like radio shows and stuff. Because in that area, they all got it, right? So it's something that they were like all listening to and stuff like that. Okay, so I'm going to read you, and this is from the Desert Oracle, a little blurb from one of his radio shows.
Okay,
this the Reverend Dr. Curtis Springer on KMTR 570 AM radio in 1944.
Oh, I'm excited. All right.
1944.
Are you going to give me like a real like religious orator 1940s voice here?
You know what? I'm going to not because okay, I don't enough. Even know how to do that.
Fair enough.
I was going to give you like a 1930s like, hey.
That's good too.
But I don't think that's appropriate.
All right. All right.
Okay. So, hello, folks. This is your old friend, Curtis Springer.
He almost can't help but do it.
I know, right? It just kind of goes with it. This is your old friend, Curtis Springer, coming to you direct from our beautiful new studios located at Zizek's Community Church on the shores of the beautiful Lake Tundaya. Is that right?
Yeah, sure.
All right. As founder and pastor of our church, I want to invite you and your loved ones to come worship with us. Come with or without money and spend a day or a week or a lifetime as you care to and enjoy our beautiful 12,000-acre estate that belongs to God. We have no promotion, no real estate for sale. Just come on out here and enjoy our wonderful hot mineral water baths, the finest of food in abundance, our wonderful desert pure fresh air, no smog, no fog. Come and learn to breathe again. Lay out in the sunshine. Oh, you'll love it here. You'll get a greater joy out of life. So until the same time tomorrow over the same wonderful radio station, I'll say bye-bye and God bless you all.
I mean, that does sound nice.
Yeah, you like that?
That sounds nice.
I mean, you're like, I'm going to go. You can easily see somebody in, you know, 1940.
Yeah.
Hang out. You're like, let's do it.
Let's go.
Let's just throw some clothes in the back of, I don't know, what kind of car do they drive in the 40s?
Car.
Our bicycle.
I think they had cars in the 40s.
And we're just
much.
But a lot of people did it.
Sure.
And we're just going to bike out to the desert.
That's awesome. I love the just old school, like, especially like early 20th century, just like con man. Mm-hmm. Because you could get away with so much at
you
that time.
So much. You can make up whatever. Yeah. Nobody had any ideas.
There's no, you couldn't do any research, hardly.
Nobody. What are you going to do? If you wanted to, like, check in on somebody, you had to write a letter.
Yeah.
And send it. And then maybe you get one back in a couple weeks. And by that time, he's already hired.
Yeah.
He's, you know.
It's fine.
He's doing the classes already.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Yep. So that is the Reverend Dr. Curtis Springer.
And Zizek's.
And Zizek's.
Home of Curtis Springer and home of all your fish statistical needs.
So it never like fell into like culty place.
No, but it's like right on the edge.
Yeah, it felt like it was right on the edge. Like you kept on, like when I was reading the story, I kept kind of like waiting for the terrible thing to happen. And I don't know, for some reason, either they didn't record it in people, you know, or they were just kind of like, eh.
Yeah,
he just was more into making the money from his, you know, his stuff. But he seemed low key.
But yes, but it's a very small step from that to the Jim Jones that I did in the first season. Right?
Sure.
It's not a
or even just
jump.
Like, you know, people getting into like weird mind control and maybe, you know, maybe that, you know, but it just seemed like it seemed like people didn't stay that long. Like it wasn't, it was like an in and out kind of spa as opposed to like, hey, everybody come here, leave your worldly possessions behind and then you never leave again.
Yeah.
Like give me all your money and then you don't ever get to go. It seemed like people came for like, you know, a week or a weekend. Bought a bunch of laxative teas and left.
And then had to go home to go to the bathroom. Good stuff.
Left with their sore toes.
So, awesome.
All right.
Thank you for that.
Yeah.
Appreciate it. Part two of the day. How is the gimlet so far? I know you didn't get to drink a whole lot during your story there.
No, it's not bad. It's, you know, it's not bad. I'm kind of sipping at it. I like the lime and stuff. I can't figure out what the gin tastes like to me. I guess Christmas tree?
That's what I have always thought gin tastes like, but in recent years, it's only during the creepy history time that I have gotten more accepting of gin.
Yeah.
I used to hate it. Now I'm more into it.
All right.
There you go.
It's not bad.
I finished mine.
I like it.
Nice.
We'll see if it changes my story at all. All right. Here we go. So this is my tale. This is one that I stumbled across on Twitter, of all places, the Elon Musk's Twitter. here's my interesting little tale for you. It's the tale of a town with the awesome name of Ravensur-Odd.
Ravensur-Odd?
Ravensur-Odd. Odd.
That's a good name.
And I debated doing this one only because it's like a tiny bit on the short side. It's like a, it's not, it's a little long for a creepy short, but it's a little short for, it's a novella. It's a creepy history novella. Yeah.
So. Hey, keep the novellas going.
I love a good novella.
Novellas are great.
Good novella. What's your, if you had to just one, like, best novella?
Oh, no.
You're on the
spot.
You know
you can't ask me things on the spot.
I know that you hate being asked on the spot.
My mind just goes completely blank.
I'm going to go with, while you're thinking, I'm going to go with The Body, a.k.a. Stand By Me by Stephen King.
Yeah, Stephen King does really good novellas.
He's very good at those.
Very good novellas.
The Metamorphosis by Kafka, that's a novella. That's really good.
Yeah.
Turns into that bug.
Oh, see.
I know. I'm sorry.
Dial In for Murder, that's a novella.
Oh, okay. I haven't read that one.
Yeah.
I mean, I know it through Hitchcock.
I'm pretty sure it's a novella.
All right, sweet. I accept.
I'm going to go with that.
Done.
There's a lot of, like...
Daphne du Maurier has a lot of good ones. Don't Look Now.
Oh, yeah. Don't Look Now. Yeah. Of course. And The Birds. The Birds is a novella.
See, I haven't read The Birds. Okay.
Or maybe it's short story. Don't Look Now, though. That's my new one.
Good.
See,
good
answer, I can't good think when it's you right ask me on the spot.
I'm sorry.
Me 3 days ahead of time so I can write it
I can
down
prepare you. Okay. Anyway, Ravensur-Odd, a creepy novella. So, to set the scene, we take you to the Humber Estuary, which is a little area on the coast of England, sort of the middle of England by Leeds. It's on the east coast, right there along the coastside. And we go to an area called Spurn Point.
Man, just all names everywhere.
But great names.
Killing
I have
it.
To
I
use
know
these names. Humber Estuary, the Spurn Point by Leeds. The Spurn Point is a little sandy area where the rivers meet the North Sea.
Okay.
So here we are. So you're envisioning it. The river comes out. It meets the North Sea. You've got this little sandy area called Spurn Point. And in the early 1200s, in the waters just off of Spurn Point, apparently the theory is that there is a shipwreck on the bottom of the sea there, and as you know, water is, you know, as the tides are moving over the shipwreck, you know, things are gathering up, and basically stones gather around the ship, sand gathers, the tides shift, and it basically comes together to form an island made of sand and stone, like sort of a almost like a glorified really big sandbar.
Wow.
Yeah. So stones, sand, they all come together, and you've got this, and it's big. It's
sure
big. It's large. I mean, when I'm not talking like a tiny little thing, it's huge.
Yeah.
Right?
Like island size.
Yeah, so it's, it's this island that kind of like appears out of nowhere in the early 1200s.
Imagine if you're just standing on the shore.
Well, I mean, I think it takes more than like a second. I think it takes some days to make this. You
I know, but
some
weeks like slowly over time, yes, just watching it form.
Yes, exactly. So this island here will ultimately become Ravensur-Odd. And the first really recorded piece about it is around 1236. When a guy with the title of Earl of Aumale, A-U-M-A-L-E,
yeah,
I don't know, Aumale.
Sounds right.
Which is like kind of by Normandy. That guy builds the town of Ravensur-Odd there on his island.
Wow.
He stakes his claim. And he says, this is it. I've got some land. I'm building a town. Ravensur-Odd. I couldn't figure out exactly. There's different people. Obviously, Earl of Aumale is a title, so I couldn't figure out exactly who it was. But based on the years, I think it was a guy named William Defarge, who amazingly, in my research, was described. I love this description of this guy. So even if this isn't the guy, I love it. William Defarge described as, quote, a feudal adventurer of the worst type.
They just hated him so
just
much.
Just a jerk adventurer. Just
ruined everybody's dinner parties.
Makes just everything terrible. Anyway, so this Earl, maybe this feudal adventurer, maybe not, some other guy. Anyway, this Earl builds up this town of Ravensur-Odd.
Mm-hmm.
He's established it. And Ravensur-Odd starts to, you know, just, you know, as towns do, it starts to build. There starts to be things there. One of the earlier things there, no surprise, a church. And much of the, almost all of the information I'm going to give you here comes from church records, right?
There was really the only way they kept records.
Right, right. Yeah. The people who were manning that church were keeping records of the town. So there's actually pretty good records of the town based on this church that was there. And pretty early on, Ravensor Odd gets a reputation as being a little odd. Bit seedy. No. Good call, though. But just a little seedy.
Okay.
It's a fishing community, maybe some kind of disreputable pirate-ish types. Mm. Seems like kind of a place that people go to get away when they need to, you know, kind of find a kind of hidden place. You know, nobody's going to come look for me on Ravens or Odd because it didn't exist 40 years ago.
They're on the wrong side of the cliffs.
Yes. Oh, you were proud of that. And I'm happy for you. It was good.
It was the gin.
Excellent. I appreciated that. It was good. Anyway, so yeah. Ravens or Odd, the wrong side of the cliffs. That was what was on their tourist information. So they establish a little fishing community, and again, they're a seedy kind of place, and they start to get into it with the nearby town of Grimsby.
Oh, sure.
The people of Grimsby.
Old Grimsby think they're better than us.
Yeah, the Grimsbys, they don't like Ravens or Odd. A big reason is because Grimsby is further up the river. And they complain that Ravens or Odd is now starting to draw trade away from them.
Okay.
Right?
That's fair.
The you know, ships would come to Grimsby.
Yeah.
And now those ships are stopping at Ravens or Odd. And it's causing problems. So Grimsby is ticked.
Yeah.
They do not appreciate the people of Ravens or Odd. They're not happy. They, in fact, say that the citizens of Ravens or Odd are doing this thing that there's actually laws saying you can't do called forestalling.
Mm-hmm.
And what forestalling is where a boat, like some sort of shipping vessel that's bringing something is all set to go to Grimsby. And what forestalling is then the people of Ravens or Odd will like paddle out to the ship in their little rowboats and be like, "Oi, come to our place instead," you know, and they'll be like, "Okay, sure." And they'll go to Ravens or Odd. So they kind of like hijack is too strong of a word, but they sort of intercept the boat, convince them to come to their town instead of Grimsby. This is illegal. You're not allowed to do this. You know, it's a bit in Grimsby. The Grimsby people claim that the Ravens or Odd folks are doing this. And given their reputation, they're probably wrong. Yeah. So Grimsby sends an appeal to the king. They say, "This is not acceptable. We're sending an appeal. We're accusing them of forestalling. Yeah. We're sending something to the king."
6 months later.
Eventually, yeah. Yeah. This is in 1290. And the king at the time is King Edward I. Now, you may have heard of Edward I. He's the Crusades guy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The Mr. Crusades. That's what Edward I is. So he's pretty busy. He's off, you know, doing a lot of stuff. He's
crusading.
Edward has King Edward I. A quick digression, again, a lot of little digressions in this, I'm sorry, but just there's so many good things about like names and stuff like that in this time of England. Edward has two amazing nicknames. He is known as A, Edward Longshanks.
Sure.
And B, the Hammer of the Scots.
I bet he gave his own that nickname to himself.
Yeah. Hey.
So call me the Hammer.
Call me the Hammer of the Scots. That's me, buddy. He probably didn't say buddy. Anyway, they send their appeal to Edward's court, and whether Edward or his court, whoever looks into the appeal, finds no wrongdoing. We do not support your claim of forestalling, and obviously the people of Grimsby are displeased by this.
Hilarious. How do you know that? They're just like, I say no.
They're just like, no. Next. Dang it. And that's that. So their claim is denied. In 1299... This is 9 years after that appeal. 1299. The people of Ravens or Odd request to have a charter, basically to be like named an official town.
Okay.
And the king indeed grants them that charter. So voila, Windsor Odd is now an official town.
Is Grimsby not a town?
I think Grimsby is a town, yes.
Oh, okay.
They gained 2 seats in a sort of local parliament. Sweet. So now they have, like, representation, yeah, which is very exciting. And they start to have a good, positive relationship with old Eddie Longshanks. They supply the king with some troops in his battles against the Scots.
Nice.
This is during the whole, you know, big, you know, Scottish wars between mm-hmm. Scotland and England. So they're supplying troops over to him. They're sending him ships with supplies. And basically for the next, you know, chunk of years, they've got a good thing going, right? We're a town. We've got representation. We're in cahoots with the king. We're supplying the king. Things are going well for those little rapscallions there in Ravensor Odd. However, despite things overall going well, there are, you know, signs of trouble brewing. In particular, in one sort of notable one, in the year 1301, there is a funeral procession going through the streets of Ravensor Odd when a big wave comes and sweeps the entire funeral procession away to sea, and
what?
That's it.
They're How close are they to the cliffs? Well, no, they're on that weird sandbar.
They're on an island. They're not on cliffs. It's an island. It's an island in the water.
Oh, jeez.
So it just goes whoosh, and the funeral procession is gone. So, you know, that's a bummer.
That's a real bummer. Yep. So wait, where's Grimsby? Are they on the land?
So Grimsby is further up the river, right? Remember I said we're the point where we are here is where the river meets the ocean, right? The mouth of the river. And Ravensor Odd is kind of in the mouth where the mouth and the ocean meet.
Okay.
Kind of a little bit into the ocean. And Grimsby is if you had traveled up the river a little bit and then it's like on the land.
Okay.
Grimsby's like a port up the river.
I see.
Whereas Ravensor Odd is an island.
Gotcha.
Right there.
Okay.
So anyway, so yeah. So there's, you know, there's some concerns. Over the coming years, next, like, you know, 20, 30 years, just there continues to be incidences like that. Land starts to get swept away by the increasing tides.
It's not a great place to live.
It's not a great place. Again, it's basically a sandbar.
Yeah.
It's a fancy sandbar.
And they're like built stuff on
yep,
it. And like
yep.
How many people are living on this thing?
I don't have an exact number, but we'll come back to
there's
that.
It's like 12.
But land is starting to get swept away. There is, as recorded in the church, there is a point at which one of the cemeteries is getting a lot of tides and things like that. And as they say, the bodies are being pulled from the graves and taken out to sea.
No, of course they are.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, because they're below ground.
Like, yeah. It's like wet sand.
Yeah. The tide is just going and like out the bodies go to sea.
Wow.
So the people of Ravensor Odd are getting a little concerned about this. Yep. And they, in the year 1346, they ask the king, no longer Edward, to look into this. And the king orders an inquisition and sends a bunch of men out. And those men, you know, examine the land. And they come back and say, well, people of Ravensor Odd, we have discovered that you are correct. There are indeed tides taking away your land, and in fact, 2/3 of your island is already gone.
Wow.
2/3. That's what the king's men tell the people of Ravensor Odd.
They have to call the king's men out to be like, you live on sand,
yeah,
and it's like fading.
And like 2/3 of the sand is gone from where it was. Yeah.
Can they not tell of themselves?
You know, slow boil, right? They're like frog in a pot. You know? 2/3 of the land is gone. The people, obviously, as soon as this announcement is made, panic. It hits the fan, obviously. People freak out.
It's just going to get tinier and tinier and tinier.
It's bad. People go berserk. They leave. They get in their boats. They bail.
They try to go to Grimsby. Grimsby's like, yeah.
Yeah, Grimsby's like, ha-ha, not anymore. They loot the church with the church records, you know, because they got to get out of here. And according to the church records, the person, you know, keeping the record says, by looting the church, he says that the people of Ravensor Odd, quote, provoke the vengeance of God.
Yeah, I mean, just leave the church alone and get in your boat and go.
Yep.
Everybody knows you don't loot the church.
Yep. So they're looting the church, they're provoking the vengeance of God, and basically the only people who become left at this point are like pirates. Like it becomes a pirate haven.
Sure.
It was already kind of seedy. Now it's really downhill.
Yeah.
It's pirate town. It's bad.
Pirate town.
And then in the year 1362, there is, that's 16 years after the Inquisition, 1362, big old storm known as I said in my teaser, the Great Drowning of Men.
Oh.
Wipes out a significant portion of who's still there, wipes out a whole bunch of the land.
Oh, no.
Causes a whole lot of problems. In 1377, it's gone.
Whoa!
By the year 1377, the whole thing is gone.
There's just like one pirate left on like a tiny patch,
and then just then a wave comes, and that's it.
Like sinks,
like the end of Cape Fear.
Yeah. Oh yeah. He like won't leave.
Yeah. So yeah, 1377, it's gone.
Wow.
In grand total, you know, there's not an exact date that it was first spotted, but it's like early 1200s. So within the course of 200 years, it came.
Yeah.
It became this town that had connections to the royal court, everything like that, and it disappeared forever.
Wow.
200 years. Its entire existence. Less than 200.
Yeah, that's really fascinating.
And it's totally gone. Today, it has not been found. Any like traces of it have not been found, though there is a very concerted effort to find it.
Like to find like some of the buildings or something?
Yeah, to find structures, okay. And to find like evidence of like this is exactly where it was. They're looking
There's just like one lone pirate.
Yeah, exactly. Like floating. Just floating. But yeah, they're looking for, you know, foundation, building, things like that. So it's being searched for. There's a lot of positive movement in the team searching for it, that they feel like they're really on the cusp of finding it, but they haven't yet. And today it is known as Yorkshire's Atlantis.
Wow.
And yeah, that's it. That's the town
that
of Ravens Around.
Fascinating that it was such a short amount of time. Certainly there have been cities that have like sank,
yeah,
you know, things like that, and like, but only.
But this entire existence
was 200
in that
years.
Amount of time, you know, and again to like come from nothing and to get to the point where you're, you know, where you're like serving the king in war,
yeah,
and then to just be completely wiped out,
yeah,
all of that in this very short little amount of time. So now, yeah, today, Yorkshire's Atlantis. People look for it. We'll see if at some point they find it.
I think the lesson learned is like the first, that Earl guy, like don't
it was a bad
build
choice.
A town on sandbar.
Nope, it was a
although
bad choice.
I guess for his lifetime, it was fine.
Yeah.
He had nowhere
true
to go but up.
It worked out well for him.
His problem.
Yeah. So there you go. Like I said, a shorter one, but I found it really a fascinating
little
story.
Yeah, that is fascinating.
There you have it.
Yeah, nice.
That's
all
it.
Right.
You didn't even get through your gimlet. It was too short. I'm sorry.
No, it was fine. I was just kind of smelling it.
That's the best way to enjoy a drink, is to just kind of smell it. That's really the way.
I had some sips.
Good. Excellent. I'm glad. Well, thank you, everybody. We will be back next week with some more. You say you've got something lined up for next week.
Well, yes. So I, you know, this one was a little tame for me.
Sure.
You know, there wasn't anything. So and that's maybe a palate cleanser before next week's, which I think is going to be pretty horrific.
You're going for it. Nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, it's borderline not distasteful.
Borderline distasteful. My goodness.
It's just a horrifying story, is all. It's not my
fault. Nonetheless heard borderline distasteful
it's
thrown out
there.
It's
not my fault. It's just a little disturbing.
It's just a little distasteful.
Just a little bit
all
disturbing.
Right. Well,
it's fine. It's
now cool. You all clearly have to come back next week to see what this is all about.
Yay. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good
See
story.
You next week.
Farewell.